Hello, everyone, and welcome to Unyielded, Thriving No Matter What. I'm your host, Bobby Kaler, and I'm so happy that you've joined us. Part of what drives my coaching career, and by extension this podcast, is to provide hope, knowledge, and assurance that we can all be more fulfilled and successful if we choose. I believe that there is tremendous power in choice. We are confronted with choices from the time we wake up in the morning until the time our heads hit the pillow at the end of the day. Will I choose to believe in possibilities for myself? Or will I choose to believe in my limitations? Will I choose courage? Or will I choose fear? Will I choose to listen to those who believe in me? Or will I choose to listen to those who doubt me and tell me that I'm not good enough? Will I choose to do the work that I know that I need to do in order to move towards my desired future? And will I choose that consistently, every day, not just once or not just for a couple of weeks, but every day for the long haul? I spent about 10 years of my life recovering from an illness that one doctor said I only had a 3% chance of recovering. And here's what I learned. I had to choose possibilities. Even when I wasn't even fully sure of what those could be, I had to choose courage. I had to choose to listen to those who believed that I would recover. And I had to do the tedious, grinding work that, at the beginning, seemed so bleak and so far away from any sort of desirable future. But I knew one truth. If I did nothing, nothing would change. And at least I was going to give myself a chance at a desirable future. This podcast was created to help you make the choices that will propel you towards your desired future. So what are we waiting for? Let's get to this week's episode. My guest today is a professional certified coach with over 25 years of senior business roles and a lifetime of experience in meditation and self-discovery. Today, she helps highly successful individuals to balance their career success and well-being needs, get in flow, and connect with their greatness. Her name is Georgina Halaby, and I cannot wait for you to meet her. Georgina, thank you so much for joining me here on the podcast.
It's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Absolutely. Well, and why don't you just kind of briefly, we're going to get to your story in a second, but why don't you just briefly introduce yourself, including where you are and that kind of thing?
Okay. So I'm a mindset and well-being coach, and I'm based out of the UK. I've been here for the last 6 months. And prior to that, I was in Singapore. So I was living in Asia for 18 years. And my background is actually in advertising and marketing technology. So before becoming a coach, I used to help companies set up in Asia. So their head office was overseas. So my job was going out and building business. And then these were always small firms. So it was managing the business, growing the business. I was sort of wearing many hats.
Yeah.
And I transitioned to coaching about 3 years ago, and I haven't looked back since.
Wow. And why don't you, and because I love your story of like the epiphany, if you will. So do you want to share that a little bit?
My boardroom story.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. So I was in a board meeting. I was in a meeting with the board, and I was the only girl and only woman, should I say. And we were not quite seeing eye to eye about the direction that the Singapore business was going in. And I wasn't happy about putting my name and my brand against this direction. It wasn't landing at all. And I could feel myself getting frustrated, and I could feel my voice going, you know, like as a woman, you're not as empowered with that sort of central bass voice. It starts to wobble and you're thinking, oh my God, my voice is wobbling. And then I got mansplained. For the first time in my life, a man actually tried to explain what I was saying, but not what I was trying to say.
Wow.
In their own words. And something in me just snapped, and I just got up and I walked out of the room. And I went straight into the bathroom and I burst into tears. I'm like,
oh my God.
And I was just in the bathroom, just crying away. And I've got, you know, eyeliner running all down my face. I've got snot dribbling out my nose. the voices look like this, breathing, yeah. You know, and I was thinking, oh my God, come on, clear yourself up, get out there, tidy yourself up. You've got to get back in there. And then this really loud, clear voice inside me just went, no, you don't. Go out there, snotty face, eyeliner everywhere, and say your piece. And I was like, too right I am, literally the snot from nowhere. I obviously wiped off the, you know, the residual snot. There's some standards. Went straight back into the boardroom and I sat down. They obviously didn't know why I walked out in the first place, but it was just because I could not contain. And I said, well, you can obviously see that I'm quite upset and distressed with this. And they were thinking, oh my God, what's going on? Yeah. I said, will you listen to me? You know, I'm not happy with the way this is going. There are certain things that we need to do correctly, just from a legal and an ethical point of view. And I'm not, you know, I'm not going to take anything else than you listening to me and hearing me out. And so please don't ever mansplain me again. And there was absolute silence. And I said my piece and they listened. And the CEO actually got up and said, look, I'm really sorry. I apologize. But it was like they weren't listening. They were wanting to hear what they wanted to hear. And so whilst I got the traction that I wanted with them, and I carried on working with them for another year, and I still have a really good relationship with all of them, it was in that moment where I just went, trust your vulnerability and stop trying to hide. And because they're used to me being quite authentic, I do say what I think and I don't cover it up. And I wasn't trying to be something that I'm not. I just went in there and I spoke my piece. But as I'm sitting there throughout the rest of this board meeting, it's like I floated out of my body or outside of myself. And I just remember thinking, what am I doing here? I'm not saving lives. I'm not, you know, I'm not doing anything really meaningful. And this isn't for me. It's literally, I knew in that moment that I couldn't carry on doing that job because for me, you spend so much of your time at work, then why do something unless you're fully vested in it? And it's important for me to be fully vested in what I'm doing, ethically, emotionally, everything. I always want to give my best. So that night I phoned up a friend who was a coach, and she calls herself a career adventurist because she's voyaged from journey to journey, you know, from career to career. She's tried out quite a lot of things. And I had a cup of coffee with her and I said, I'd love to hear your story. And so as she told me her story, she asked, you know, have you thought of coaching? I was like, well, tell me about coaching. You know, what's it about? And the more she told me about it, I just thought, God, I didn't know you could get paid for this because this is essentially what I've been doing all of my life. You know, you could call it different things, life guide or mentor or all of these different things. The only difference was that you are doing it in a different way. You're actively listening, you're sealing your mouth and you're receiving so much more than giving. But I was like, I can do this. And she gave me the best piece of advice there. And then she said, don't quit your day job just yet. Go to school, get your coaching belt, you know, coaching degree under your belt, and then transition. And I did. But for that whole year, I was just so, you know, dying to get out there and coach. So I started already with working with, you know, coaching clients on the side. And then when COVID hit in Singapore, I just said to my business, that's it. I'm not gonna sell anything anymore. I'm gonna step into coaching full time. And if you like, I'll coach the business. So they did, they took me up on my word and I coached a couple of different teams. And that was really, really good. I also had a couple of independent clients under my belt and it grew quickly. You know, it kind of grew from referrals. I went back to school, I studied how to launch myself in my business. You know, really step into the being of a coach, overcome all of the self-doubts and the money blocks and yada, yada, all of those. I literally went back to school throughout and pushed myself. So throughout Corona, it was an amazing year of growth, but it started off with that wobbly voice in that boardroom and just yielding to that voice that just went, go out there and say your piece.
Wow. There's so much of that, Georgina, that I love. And hats off to you too, because so many people said, oh, when COVID hit, like, you know, is this really the time to start a business? And why not? Maybe it's when people needed it more than ever, you know?
Absolutely.
You know? Okay. So I want to go back to your story. There's a few things. You said, trust your vulnerability, stop trying to hide.
Yeah.
What? Tell me more about that.
Well, I was hiding in that bathroom going, I need to tidy up my face and walk out there all polished and presentable, get my voice under control. And then I was like, I don't want to get my voice under control. I want to bloody well be heard. You know?
Right. But we do
get
that.
Their ears out of control, you know, in control.
Yeah. But it just kind of hit me, you know, how much we do that, you know, for a variety of reasons. I'll never forget. This was, oh my gosh, 7 years ago, I decided to hire a personal shopper because I personally hate shopping. And, you know, but when you're showing up at client work, you have to be presentable and, you know, you want to look good. And because I don't like it, I have no idea like how to put outfits together. And her name was Rachel and it was great. And she came out to my house. And the first thing was we did it's called closet shopping, where she goes through the closet and I'm thinking, oh, I've got so much stuff in there. She's going to find all these outfits that we could put together. And she's going through one piece after another. And I could see like this dismay. And she just turned and looked at me and she's like, I've read your book and you're such a powerful person. Why are you hiding in these clothes? And she goes, it's like you're hiding. And at first I was like, well, who are you to say that, you know, but as I thought about it and then I started working with her, I thought, you know, she's right. And so that's why when you said that, that really clicked for me. You know, like I think each of us maybe in our own way at some point have done that. And I just, it's curious.
Yeah. It's interesting because it's almost as if you gave the power and the responsibility for somebody else to make your choices in that moment. And she picked up on that. It's like, where is your essence in this?
Yeah, where's your voice? Yeah. You know, so it was really powerful. The other thing I wanted to comment on. So you said that moment in the boardroom where, you know, I'm not saving lives. I'm not doing anything meaningful. How long had you been in that position, that role before that moment?
About 3 years.
3 years. Okay. And I'm curious, did it feel that way the whole time or just there at the end?
I love that question. There's that nagging feeling in your gut. It's never brand new. You kind of shrug it off or you look elsewhere and you think now's not the time. Yeah. You know, I have family and kids and responsibility. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's kind of there in the background. It just, did you actively suppress it over those 3 years?
No, I don't think so.
Okay.
I do have a very strong core belief that when wisdom or your gut instinct speaks to you, it whispers. And I'm vested in always listening to that.
Yeah.
But it was in that moment that it crystallized in terms of, I'm doing this right now.
Yeah. Yeah. That's really, I love the way you put that, the wisdom and the gut instinct, it whispers to us, you know, but it's there. Okay. So tell me more about how did you make this transition? You said you went back to school, you did it on the side. Anything else there about how you made this transition?
Yeah, I took half of it as my own personal development. So half of the job was going out there and coaching, getting the clients and coaching, right? Business development and getting out there for the first time. And, you know, it's scary and putting yourself out there and then just coaching my butt off, right?
Yeah.
But then the other half was personal development. So that was leaning into everything that I needed to uncover about myself, all of the things that I was getting in my own way, all of the things that would allow me to understand what my niche, all of the problems and the obstacles that they would be facing. Because essentially, as a coach, the people that you're coaching is you. It's a mirror of you and your own journey.
Yeah.
So there was a bit of digging and soul searching and insight mining. And that to me remains to this day, it's half of the job.
Yeah.
Half is outwards, the other half is inwards, right?
Yeah. And for those people not in the coaching profession, because I loved what you just said there about who you're really coaching is like who you were or who you are. And I was doing some work on our avatar, and it was the person said, your avatar is really where you were 2 to 3 years ago.
Right.
You know, because that's a person that you want to help. So could you speak a little bit more about that?
Yeah, about the essence of who we coach being the avatar of ourselves or who my niche is and how I'm coaching them as a...
Both, actually.
Myself.
Yeah, both.
Okay, so I had a coaching session with a very powerful coach, this wonderful gentleman called Niyama, and he actually took me through a whole process of questions where he was saying, you know, pick your ideal clients and name them, literally paint them out. What makes them so good? What is their shadow side? And what is the gift in the shadow side? So when we talk about the shadow side, it's the darkness that they're trying to overcome within them. What they would perceive as their own weaknesses, perhaps, or the ways that they get in their own way. And then when he replayed it back to me, he's like, does it sound like anyone you know? And I'm like, oh my God, yes, 100%. The penny dropped. It's like, yes, it's been the people that I'm trying to help is actually myself.
Yeah.
3 years ago. But by its very nature, when we are actually throwing our intention out, helping other people along the same path that we have come, we learn and grow more. It's like, what is it they say? Those who want to learn, teach.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's the same. It's kind of just forwarding on your own journey.
Yeah. Yeah. And deepening that.
Yeah.
You know, and you said it was the shadow side. And what'd you call it? The gifted
side? The gift. The gift of the shadow side.
Oh, okay.
So for me, at that stage, it was all about, and there's an evolution, because as you grow and evolve, your kind of, your niche and your coaching evolves as well.
That's right. Well,
at that time, it was really about surfacing from this feeling of trauma or emotions that are suppressed that will spiral out of control and, you know, subsume you in this fear of just, you know, imploding and ruining it all. That's very much where I was at that stage in my coaching. And it has kind of grown quite a lot from there, to sort of simmered down to just overcoming self-doubt and all the different ways that we listen to our own judgment and listen to our own saboteurs, the voices that shout instead of the wisdom that whispers, right?
That's right.
So it's really different parts of your brain, different parts of your body, and just sort of building the self-trust that you can just go, I'm going to listen to this. I'm going to listen to this whisper, because I know it's going to serve me, serve the world. Yeah.
Yeah. That's so cool. That's awesome. And now, who do you serve now?
So because my background is in media and sales, I do tend to work with a lot of people marketing and technology, but I work for a lot of professionals. So rather than going and coaching businesses, I tend to work with sort of senior leaders who are looking to strike that balance between optimal performance and well-being. Because at the moment, it feels like either or, right?
That's right.
I have to be, my ambition and drives comes at the cost of my self-care needs, right? And it's not so. It's how do you make it and how can me overcoming my self-doubt and stepping into this clarity of mind and this self-trust serve me from a business perspective, serve me in terms of being more resourceful, being more creative, being more of a leader, right? So it's having that balance of outer success and inner peace, which has been so important to me all of my life. It's that I'm a Gemini, right? I have to have both outer success and peace.
Right. When you say well-being,
yeah,
that's one of those words. I don't know how it is here, but I think here in the US, people have vastly different interpretations. What's your definition? How do you view well-being?
I love that question. Nobody has ever asked that to me. You know, Bobby?
Well, that could mean that it's a weird question, but we'll go with something else.
Yeah.
But yeah, what I'm curious. So,
to me, well-being is this feeling comfortable in your own skin, right? It's where your heart and your mind are aligned, where you feel a sense of contentment and equanimity.
Yeah.
I think people assume that with well-being, it's constant joy.
Yeah.
Sometimes it's just about being okay when things aren't okay. It's that self-trust. It's just being happy in your own skin and content that you're there.
Yeah, I like
that. It's like
that.
A peacefulness and a calm centeredness. But there is an feeling of expansion and how do I even describe it? It's like when you completely quieten your mind and it's just that stillness and peace and joy. There is joy there, but it's not overwhelming. It's like this simmering contentment, right?
Yeah.
That to me is what they're.
Yeah. And you know, when you said happy in your own skin and what you're describing there, that made me think about this too. It seems like that could be different for every single person, right? They have to be in alignment. It's not what I think is alignment or you think is alignment. Is that what you?
100%.
Yeah. And I think that's why there's no one, it's not a prescription. It's not a one size fits all.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that. And now you just moved back to the UK 6 months ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So are most of your clients there in the UK? Are they still in Singapore or both?
Well, I'm very lucky because I started my business, really, it started ramping up during Corona. So of course, everybody was on Zoom, which means that I was able to tap into a global audience. And audience, there we go. My client base.
Yeah.
And so now I continued to work with everybody across the world. I've got clients in Mexico, Australia, Europe, everywhere.
Nice. Yeah. That's awesome. That is such a great story. What are some of the things, as you've worked with clients and even for yourself, what are some of those, like the internal tensions that hinder personal and professional growth?
Oh, interesting. I find the internal tensions come to do with our subconscious beliefs, right? So sometimes we consciously want something. Mm-hmm. Like, I want money. I want to be able to be successful. I want to feed my family. I want prestige and success, right? Consciously, we want that. But subconsciously, we might have a fear that goes something like, money is the root of all evil. If I achieve this, someone will come and take it away from me. It's boom or bust. It's just all of these beliefs. So what you've got is a perfect storm that's being created, where consciously you want something, but subconsciously you're sabotaging it, right? Yes. And the subconscious sabotage always has to do with trust and protection. Your mind thinks it's actually helping you by keeping you small. So it's all fear-based. And when we were talking about the shouty saboteurs and the quiet sort of sage mind, and I'm using, I guess, more positive intelligence terms, sage and saboteurs, the internal tensions are when your fear-based protection mechanisms are trying to keep you small. And your more conscious value-led beliefs want something bigger for you. And you can't possibly achieve one until you've aligned the other. So a lot of the work that I do is really in surfacing what those limiting beliefs are, surfacing what our fears are, and just allowing the people to consciously align them so that all of their mind and body are working towards the same goal.
Okay. And I would think that'd be one of the things, I don't know your experience, but it's, you can do it on your own, but I think it's way harder to surface those on your own. Is that your take on it?
I would agree that you'd go a lot faster, deeper.
Yeah.
And with somebody else.
Yeah. And it's, maybe I'm just justifying why I still spend money on coaches, but,
right. You know,
but for example, I recently redoing my EQ certification to coach in that. I did it for the first time back in 2007, and it's just, you know, part of the process. And I did my, it's called the SAY through 6 seconds. And the coach who was debriefing me, my empathy score is really high. And that's not surprising. It always has been. But she just quietly asked me after a few minutes of talking, she's like, do you ever extend that empathy towards yourself?
Hmm.
And it just stopped me in my tracks. And her name's Yoshimi. And I'm like, well, it's never occurred to me. So I guess the answer is no. You know, but I wouldn't have gotten there on my own to that point, at least not that quickly. Or, I mean, it was just, wow, did things shift, you know, and those are cool moments in coaching.
100%. And what have you noticed now since you've got that awareness with internal empathy?
Oh my gosh. Now I'm noticing all the time. Like, you know, I notice the way I talk to myself. I notice when I'm pushing myself too hard, and it's like, no, it's really amazing how with that one question, things just expanded.
Yeah. You That's know? The biggest thing that I find with people is that they are so, their self-doubt comes because they listen to their judge, right?
Yeah,
their judge is always saying really crappy things about them, things that they would never let other people say to them. And most of the time, people who are pointing fingers one way, judging people one way, they're judging themselves back. They have no empathy for themselves.
That's a good point. That's a really good point. So tell me more about the resourceful sage, you know, about that. And then how do people move from that fear-based into that?
So there's so many different ways. You know, what's that expression? All different fingers pointing at the same moon. You know, essentially, I have this belief, and it's something that I was lucky enough to tap into from a very, very young age. I remember first hearing about meditation when I was 16, and I thought, oh, I'll have to try that. And so that night I lay in bed and I tried to sort of numb my feet and my legs and all the rest of it. And all of a sudden I had this beautiful image of a sun over the sea, and literally my mind calmed down and I was able to sort of connect and listen into myself.
Wow.
In a way that we would do to our friends, but we don't often do. Everything is external, right? So from that That's moment right. on, to me, it was a really fundamental resource that I could go back in and I could ask myself questions, right? And some of the things that would bubble up from my own subconscious were just astounding. Questions like, why is this happening? Or, you know, I had a lump in my arm. Why is this happening? And just incredible knowledge that comes from inside your body and this wisdom. So I've always sort of known how to tap into it, but there are so many different ways. I actually went back to school about 12 years ago. I studied Buddhism for 4 years, Asian spiritual classics. So wow. Quite a bit of Buddhism and Hinduism. And that's all really about switching off the narrative mind, switching off the ego, right? Mm-hmm. So the first biggest thing is judgment. Judgment is the root, one of the roots of all of our suffering, judgment of ourselves, others, and circumstance. And, our ego is all about judging, and it's protecting our idea of identity. And it's all based in your back of your brain. It's that fear center that is there to protect you. And so, you know, if you want to switch on your wisdom within, it's just a case of switching off that narrative circuitry. And the age-old wisdom that people of all religions and faiths and discipline are tapping into is the use of your body. So when you think of the word ecstasy, ecstasis, literally means getting out of yourself. It's transporting yourself out of your own body, getting off your head, literally.
Yeah.
And people do crazy things to switch off the narrative. It's drugs, alcohol, whatever. But the people who know, they use things like sport to fatigue the body. Yoga. Yoga is all about vritti. It's about calming the rumination of your narrative mind, because your body doesn't live in the future or the past. You know, the future is all the anxieties and the what ifs. And the past is just a unfaithful replay of what you think actually happened in your mind. But your body, try experiencing pain or effort, your body only lives in the now. And so when you tap into your body, it switches off the narrative circuitry, the saboteurs. And then when you have that stillness, out comes the wisdom. And you could also do it through meditation. That's been my age-old practice. But there's so many different ways. Music, art. People who say, I can't meditate, not true. Have you read a good book? Have you, painted? Have you been so lost in a single focus that everything else just melts away? That's wisdom. That's peace. That's that feeling of well-being, right? Yeah. That's when the wisdom can come in.
Yeah, that makes so much sense, especially when you're talking about, I can't remember, it was the yoga and doing something. And I think you said being outside, and it reminded me, it's one of the reasons I love cross country skiing so much, because physically it's a lot of exertion and I'm in a beautiful place and I love the snow. I've always been a winter person, and you just like, you hear the sound of the snow on your skis. It's almost mesmerizing to me. And that's when everything just kind of settles and it's peaceful. And you're saying that's when that sage within us can be heard.
Yeah. Cause you're present.
Yeah.
You're present in your body. Your mind is present in your body. It's not in the anxiety of the future or the regret of the past. It's with you.
Yeah. Okay. So if I'm hearing you right, it is calming the fear based side of our brain. Is really more, it's not like intentionally thinking, how do I calm this? How do I calm this? It's about being present, being in the moment. Is that kind of on track?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay.
I also have this fundamental belief that reaching well-being and happiness and performance isn't about acquiring anything you don't have. It's not about getting anything new. The only thing it is about is dropping stuff, dropping your judgment, dropping your ego, dropping your attachment and your grasping to ego. It's dropping the narrative of the saboteurs. And I'm actually getting certified on positive intelligence, which is actually like an offshoot from EQ. So it's literally like a mixture of neuroscience, cognitive behavioral therapy, sports science, and positive psychology. And he's literally distilled everything into like a really simple operating system, where he said the guy Shirzad, who's the founder of this, has distilled everything down into 10 key saboteurs, right? Ways in which we get in our own way. And he's used it like factor analysis. So if you imagine you can have a whole palette of colors from red, green, and blue, you have a whole series of self-doubt and self-limitations from these 10 saboteurs. And I'm sure you'll recognize a few of them if I name it, like the judge, the controller, the perfectionist, the avoider, the victim, you know, all of these traits. And each of them take a strength and they take it into hyperdrive so that it becomes like an anxiety-based reaction that's great for motivating but terrible for happiness. So he's distilled it down into a really simple operating system that goes something like this. And I'm missing all of the preamble, but it goes, when you're feeling a negative emotion, stop. You're in the territory of the fear-based brain, back of your brain. You're being sabotaged. So stop. Take 10 seconds, the space of three breaths, to do something that anchors you into your body. It could be rubbing your two fingers together with 100% attention. It could be listening, you know, what can you hear in the foreground or background? But essentially, it starves your narrative in the back of your brain and it puts you in the present. And then from there, your prefrontal cortex lights up, that part of your brain that is, he describes as the sage brain, but it's that part that allows us to witness ourselves, right? Mm-hmm. To be strategic, creative, resourceful, all of these things, to be empathetic. And once we have that activated, we can hear it, right? The silent whisper. And we ask, well, what would be the sage thing to do from there? What can I learn? Yeah. What would my empathy show me? In what way can I innovate or explore or stay true to my values? So it's literally switching off and switching on using three core muscles.
Yeah. And it was taking the pause for 10, notice it.
Yeah.
Pause for 10 seconds, the space of three breaths, and do something that you can bring you into the present, like rubbing your fingers together, tuning into a sound.
Yeah.
Okay. That's cool. And I love that because it's something that it's so tangible that you can do.
Yeah. So easy. And it's secular. Yeah. Anybody from any religion can do it.
Can do that. I was taking it's called the Healthy Minds app. And it's based in positive psychology, and they had a founders series. And I took that. It was really cool. And one of the things they talked about is using it's the anchoring, whether that's sounds or sights or whatever that might, or touch. And for me, it's sounds. So like if something's going on, because I'm hypersensitive to that, which is good and bad, but just like really just stopping and saying, what do I hear in this moment? And it's just, it has a fabulous way of bringing me back to the present. Cause I think like a lot of people, I can always be skipping ahead or thinking about this or that, whatever. And that is one thing that helps bring me into the present. So I love this. I'm going to have to check that out. Positive intelligence.
Yeah. And if you're a coach, you can actually go on. There's a 6 weeks course that there's a grant. You can go on it for free. And then I'm paying to get certified as well, because I'm just finding, you know, I've spent my life meditating and trying to reach certain places. Nobody has to do that. They can shortcut it. It's the best of all the world, all the different worlds, really quickly. So yeah, look up Grant for Positive Intelligence. And any of you that are coaches out there, I can highly recommend it.
Yeah. You know what? And if you wouldn't mind when we're done, maybe you'll send me a link and I'll put that in the show notes.
100%.
Because I think that's awesome. Because I have to say, when you were talking about when you're 16 and you meditated for the first time, I'm like, I'm so envious. I don't know that everybody has that experience right out of the gate with meditation, but it seems like you've always been, prone to that.
Well, the first time I did, you know, after I saw the sun rising on the sea, I was starting to analyze it, and I actually had an out of body experience. I literally left my body and I was terrified. I was like, oh my God, what's happening? And I got straight back in there, and it's only ever happened to me once. I would love to do it again. The fear kicked in straight away. And I'm like, oh my God, terrifying.
I can imagine. And yet when you talk about your story in the boardroom, that was, you know, a bit of being outside your body as well. Like, what am I doing here?
Yeah.
You know,
it felt very, very different. One was actually lifting physically out of my body. The other one was literally as if I was stepping outside of my own consciousness and asking myself.
That's powerful. Anything else? And I love what you've offered so far. Anything else that you would offer to those people who experience self-doubt? Because I mean, everybody does.
Yeah. To me, it comes down to one thing, and that's just trust yourself. You honestly have everything that you need inside, all of the wisdom. And I know it sometimes doesn't feel like it, but start small. Start with doing things that that build your self-trust, you know, trusting your vibes, trusting your own advice. And the only way that you can really do that is taking time out and listening to yourself. I think we're, you know, one of the big things for self-doubt is this need for external validation.
Yeah.
Hearing from other people. And often, you know, we take advice from people who we don't trust or we would never go to. Yeah, it's you have all of the wisdom that you have within your body actually knows. So just be aware. I would say start to be compassionately aware of your own self-talk. Just notice all the different ways you judge yourself.
Yeah.
And as you do that, right, you'll start to build the muscle and the reflex of noticing. Your awareness will tell you every single time that you're self-judging. And then it comes down to choice. It's like, do I want to believe all these things that I'm telling myself? Right? If I come from that place where I am an imposter and I am not smart enough or I am not good enough, what am I going to be able to bring to the world? What in what way will that impact my mindset and my actions? And is what in what way is that impacting my results that I'm getting? Right? Now, let's say that there was an alternative truth, which is I have access to the sage brain. If I can just switch off this mind, this fear-based mind, and tap into this resourceful part of my brain that knows without a shadow of a doubt that I am and have always been enough, that is connected, right? Knows the connection that we have to the earth, to each other, to the universe, God, whatever you want to call it, right? It just knows. If we can come from that place, right, and build that self-belief, in what way would that impact the actions and the mindset and change the results that we have? And the question is not, do I believe it 100%? The question then becomes, what would happen if I showed up as if I believed it? Yeah. Right? Because it comes down to a choice. Ultimately comes down to a choice. We can, it's like the story. Have you heard the two wolves, the story of the two wolves?
Oh, I think I have, but now I don't remember it. So please tell.
So it's based on a I think an old Native American Indian story where there's a granddad and he's talking to his grandson. He said, "Grandson, we each have two wolves inside us. One is constantly howling. It's filled with darkness and fear and rage and regret. It's full of fury and venom and recrimination. And the other one is full of love and compassion and kindness and generosity and all of these other qualities. And they are fighting constantly within all of us, battle to the death." And the grandson goes, "Wow, do I have this, granddad?" He said, "You have it. I have it. We all have it." So the young kid goes, "Well, which one's going to win?" And the granddad said, "Well, that's up to you, whichever one you feed."
Yeah.
So it's the same thing. We can feed our saboteur minds. We can feed our self-judgment, or we can choose not to. We can choose to step into a path where we feed our self-belief, self-confidence. But it's not easy to do when you're being hijacked, when you're in a place where you don't feel safe, which is why this whole positive intelligence, all these tools that we have to just notice that these are saboteurs that are arising. Aren't who we are. We aren't our emotions. We're not these thoughts. We're this huge consciousness that's experiencing them.
Yeah.
Right. It's this blue sky that's identifying with all of the clouds that are passing. Right. And as soon as we stop identifying with our clouds and we realize that we're this consciousness behind it, well, then we can choose where we want to put our attention.
Yeah. I love that. And as soon as you started telling that wolf story, I remembered it. Yeah. I love that story. It's whatever one you feed, you know.
Whichever one you feed.
Yeah. You know, oh my gosh, so much there, Georgina. I love that. One of the things you said in there, and I think it could be missed, is you made the statement, "I am enough.
I am enough.
I'm enough." 100%. Period.
Yeah.
That's the sentence.
Yeah. That's the biggest fear that we all have. I mean, every single person I know with self-doubt, which is everyone I think on earth, has this deep fear of not enoughness. And, you know, the work that Brené Brown does on this is amazing because she talks about this whole fear of judgment. If you're not enough, if you don't feel enough, you're constantly looking for validation by other people or to prove yourself, or you're looking to somehow put on that mask that we talked about in the beginning and not show your authentic face, because we're all primates, essentially. If we're judged and we're out of the pack, then it's death for us. So, you know, the whole idea of, you know, self-worth and self-judgment being fostered in silence and self-judgment. And as soon as we burst the thing wide open and we show, hey, I'm vulnerable, I don't think I'm enough. I'm a crap mother half the time. I lose my tempers. You know, as a coach, I should be this highly enlightened person. No, I'm a very human person who constantly loses their shit. But I am trying. Yeah. And everything that I'm learning, I'm passing back down. You know, it's
that's right.
It's a journey.
Yeah. But what I love about that, and I find myself doing this too, like, and it can be anything. I can be trying out new makeup. Doesn't matter. You know, like, oh, I really, it's like, I'm trying, right? Yeah. I'm actively learning. I am actively in the process of like, it's okay. You know, it's okay. Where I am is okay. It's enough. But I think we all do that. The other thing I wanted to ask you about too, because I know this is something that comes up a lot. People think that they're the only ones who have self-doubt. And I think it's people think, well, you know, when I'm successful, then I won't have self-doubt. I was coaching someone just last week and she's like, oh, it's like, she was apologizing for it. And I'm like, I've had people on this show who are former NFL players. I've had best-selling authors on this podcast. They all have self-doubt too. I mean, it seems like it's what makes us human.
It's the human condition.
Yeah.
And the thing is, self-doubt doesn't necessarily have to be a bad thing. It's like this whole idea of judgment again. Sometimes it's okay just being okay, or sometimes it's okay not being okay, right?
Right.
It's okay to have self-doubt. We all have self-doubt. The difference is, do we want to use it to become a better part of ourselves? Yeah, do we want to become aware of it and then go, hold on a second, I am enough? Or, you know, when you lean in and you start to listen to the narrative, right, that's keeping you small, within that, there's the gem of insight. It traces back to our fears and our limiting beliefs and all the things that are getting in our way. And if you treat that as a gift, you can literally identify what it is and align it and use all of that energy that you're constantly funneling with fighting within yourself towards something. There is that power of expansion because of self-doubt. If we were born perfect, where is the growth? Where's the fun?
There's been no need, right? Well, you're already perfect.
Yeah. And in fact, I kind of think we are already perfect, you know, messy, but already perfect.
Right. Right. Yeah. And yeah, the perfection is maybe it is because we are, you know, we exist.
And the other thing that I want to call out here is it's this whole idea of perfectionist reaching your potential as a static thing, right? It's like, when I have done this, I will be. It's a complete myth, right?
Yeah.
You never are. You're constantly looking up to the new area of growth. And I love David Rock talks about potential as a verb instead of as an adjective. So it's potentiating. It's a process because we aren't static. We're constantly growing. Nothing in life is permanent. You know, everything changes.
That.
And as a result, we have the capacity to change. There is opportunity in that.
Yeah.
There is opportunity in self-doubt. There is opportunity in imperfection.
I love that. Potential as a verb.
Yeah.
That is awesome. You know, okay. Have you ever had cats?
No, I have dogs.
Okay, I have dogs.
I'm not averse to cats.
Okay, so I've had both because, you know, I grew up on a farm. And at one point we had 5 cats because 3 of them were rescues and whatever. But one of the things I always noticed about cats, and I always thought it related to human potential, and I always thought it was really stupid, but now this is like, oh, this makes sense. A cat loves to climb, right? I had a cat, Boo. And Boo would always want to try to find like, well, can I make it up onto that ledge? Can I make it to this ledge? And she'd get up on the ledge, you know, and she'd probably look around for like a few seconds. And then what did she do? She instantly started looking at that ledge up there or over there. I mean, it was just, and then pretty soon that's where she's going to be. And I always thought that's a little bit like human potential. We're like a cat. Well, I've made it to here. What's next?
Yeah.
You know, and leave it. You said that was David Rock, right?
Yeah.
He's amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. That is awesome. Anything else you want to share before we let people know how to get in touch with you or learn more about you?
Following on what you were just saying about the way that we keep climbing and climbing, that there's a difference. So I have one of my saboteurs from Positive Intelligence is the hyperachiever.
Oh,
and the hyperachiever is all about, you know, I have 5 minutes of satisfaction as to what I've just achieved.
Yep.
And then I'm constantly looking at the next biggest thing. Now, my strengths, or the strengths of people who have the saboteur, the hyperachiever saboteur, notice I'm not saying who are hyperachievers, but who have that saboteurs, are that they are constantly looking. The strengths are that they are highly motivated, self-directed, amazing at helping other people, but, you know, very, very driven. So the difference with the hyperachiever saboteur is that we don't stop to enjoy the view. We're constantly looking at where we are going next or where we need to go next. And there's that anxiety, that feeling of not enough. I need to keep performing. I need to keep proving. And that's something that I have to really be aware of with myself, my own coaching. When I feel the need to perform, I have to kick myself in the pants, right? Because it's always there. Whereas I think once you reach that stage of well-being and contentment, it's a case of, I'm going to enjoy the view and I'm going to acknowledge how far I've come and celebrate that. Now, where do I want to go to? Not have to go to. Where do I want to go to? And it feels different. Yeah.
It was. It's so funny you bring that up, because I was going to say, when I was telling the story about, you know, Boo, what went through my head is we don't take the time to celebrate, because that's, you just described me.
Yeah.
I mean,
right.
I just skip. It's almost like I skip right over it.
Yeah.
You know, that's one of the best things. I'm going to take this back to cross-country skiing for a minute. One of the best things about cross-country skiing is I grew up in the Midwest here in the States, and it's really flat. I live in Colorado now, not flat at all. And I was terrified of doing the hills because it's scary. You know, it's like, this is huge. And when I'm skiing with my husband, and he's been a skier forever, when we were either skiing up or when we ski down, one of the things he has me do is, especially when it's a new hill, he'll say, wait a minute, stop for a second. Look behind you. What did you just do? And it's physical. You can see the mountain that you've either gone up or come down. And I've also often told him, like, wow, that's so powerful. I wish I had more of those moments in my whole life to see the mountain that I just conquered. But like you, I don't take that time. It's like, okay, on to the next. I've done it.
One of the most powerful exercises that I've ever done is when somebody asks, write down everything that you've achieved. Write down all the hours that you've put into personal development, self-growth, you know, all of the hours that you spent coaching or helping, or you write it all down and you look at it and you think, holy crap,
I did this. That.
But we don't look at that enough, you know? And so for people who overcome self-doubt, go back and look at what you've achieved. It doesn't have to be a mountain. It doesn't have to be a huge thing, but every single time you show up in a way that you're proud of, go back and celebrate it.
Yeah.
You're going to look back on your deathbed and you're going to look for those moments. You're not going to look at, oh, I wish I'd been the CEO of a company, you know? And I'm not saying it's not a good thing to be a CEO of a company, but it's not a good thing to be an unhappy CEO of a company with something to prove, as opposed to somebody who is out there who is living it and being it because it's something that they love and they're great at.
Yeah.
So that's the difference. That's the whole, you know, when we're talking about performance and well-being, you drop the anxiety and you drop the fear-based needs, you're already in optimal performance. You've got that well-being and you've got that clarity of just dropping the rest of the crap. You've got that extra time.
Yeah.
Because you're present.
And that goes back to, I think, what you said earlier, the comfort in your own skin.
Yeah.
Wow. I could feel the difference when you were talking there between the two. That's awesome. Oh my gosh. Well, you'll have to come back sometime. There's so much more we could explore, but I want to make sure we get to this. How can people learn more about you, what you're doing, get in touch with you, that type of thing?
Yeah. Well, I think I might've emailed you my link. So GeorginaHallaby.com is my website. You can also look me up on LinkedIn. I have a YouTube channel as well. I run lots of workshops and I have loads of free content that I like to just put out there to help people. And what you can do is, if you're interested, book in a session with me on my website. I offer half an hour of a free chat, or if you want to have a 90-minute deep dive discovery session, then let's do that. And that's really a journey of discovering what is getting in your way and developing strategies so that you could step up to and step into what you're meant to be. And I would invite you from a sage to sage perspective. You know, it's going to be a discovery from both our sides. There's going to be no obligations, no sales pushiness. But if you're genuinely interested in having an exploratory conversation with yourself, as much with me, you're invited. I'd love to hear from you. I just ask that you come with the right intention of making the most of this for yourself.
Yeah, very cool. I love that. So, well, Georgina, thank you so much. This has just been, it's been so insightful, so helpful. And I've loved it.
I've loved it too. And I'd be love to come back with or without the recording. Pop in for a virtual cup of tea.
I would love that. I absolutely would. I hope that you loved that conversation and found a ton of value in it. I know that I did. And as always, it's tough to limit this to just three, but here are my three insights for thriving. Number one, our inner wisdom whispers to us if we take the time and make the choice to listen to it. I loved what Georgina was explaining in terms of positive intelligence, noticing the fear-based voice, doing something that brings us into the present moment, and then that allows the sage within us to be heard. Number two, I am enough, period, full sentence. And number three, I love thinking about potential as a verb. It makes so much sense to me. What I also love about it is that it allows for the expansion of the human spirit and of our journey. It's not a one-time event or a static event. It evolves and unfolds as we do. I'd love to know what your takeaways were, so please drop me a line at bobby@unyielded.net and let me know what you loved about this episode. Also, if you know of a friend, a family member, or a colleague that could benefit from the insights shared in this podcast, this episode, please share it with them. That's why we started this podcast, to help others. That wraps up this episode. Thank you so much for tuning in and for listening. And remember, as you go about your week, to thrive no matter what.